If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
It's late, but I'm here and so are you. So let's talk about kneecaps and backup quarterbacks and cornerbacks and linebacker blitzes and cover zeros and all the Chiefs stuff you could possibly handle for the next hour or so here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Thanks for hanging out with us here after tonight's World Series action. We have just this time, just with us right now, to talk about some Chiefs stuff for a while. If you're just catching the end of the baseball coverage and hearing the beginning of this and saying, this is garbage, I'm going to sleep, no worries. Come back for the podcast edition of this show. Just search for Almost Entirely Sports over at your podcast. This isn't Almost Entirely Sports in its true form, but we'll put the podcast up there, or you can just check it out in the 810 mobile app under Almost Entirely Sports, or maybe you already are listening to the podcasts, and thanks for doing that if that's how you found it. We will talk to Seth Kizer tonight here in just a little while. It's Tuesday, so we talk to Seth. That's the one consistency I have in my life, is that no matter when we are airing, we will talk to Seth at some point in that Tuesday show. So we'll talk to him coming up in a little bit about what the Chiefs do with Matt Moore instead of Patrick Mahomes, and what you even dare to look for whenever you see a quarterback switch like that. I think it's really, really interesting. Plus, he's been looking at the Chiefs defense from Thursday night. So we'll talk about some of that with him as well. I will start with the thing that was more newsworthy, admittedly, quite a long time ago, 36-ish hours ago, I think, Monday around noon. With all of the injury updates that we got from Chiefs head trainer Rick Burkholder, you may have already heard this. If so, take it again, because there are significant updates here on obviously Patrick Mahomes. He broke a little bit of news on Kendall Fuller and then delivered a horrifying phrase for a few really, really important parts of this defense. So listen to what Rick Burkholder had to say on Monday, because this is going to inform how we talk about the Chiefs for a good long while now.
All right, so first, Kendall Fuller fractured his right thumb in against Houston. Didn't play against Denver and was operated on in Los Angeles on Friday by Dr. Shin. He returned back to Kansas City Sunday and started rehabilitation. So that's one you didn't know about. And then just to address Patrick Mahomes, you guys saw the game and the video. Dr. Paul Schreppel reduced the dislocated patella. We had x-rays at the game that came back negative, did an MRI Friday here at the facility, and that turned out as good as we could possibly imagine. He's worked all weekend here. He's done rehabilitation, did extensive pool therapy here at the complex, has done some stuff in the athletic training room, and is progressing nicely. As I've talked to you guys over the years here, Every guy's different, and every injury is different. You saw that with Tyreek, how we manage that, and we do this with all of our players. So we'll manage Patrick accordingly, and he's right in the middle of the process. So I appreciate your time.
That is some like genuinely newsworthy updating on obviously the most important player, and then another legitimately important one for this Chiefs team, Mahomes and then in Kendall Fuller. We're going to start with Patrick Mahomes, and then Reed gave an update on Fisher, Watkins, Jones, and Wiley that I'll get to in a second. With Patrick Mahomes, the fact, we had been getting these reports, right? Like this, the fact that we didn't get this from the Chiefs until Monday is a little silly. Like, right, like Reed had his conference call on Friday, and as he was on the call, Rappaport was tweeting that it went really well and the Chiefs are very happy about it. And then Reed said he doesn't know yet. I mean, whatever. I don't think Ian Rappaport genuinely found out before Andy Reed did. I imagine that the plan there was just, hey, don't say anything. We'll talk to them on Monday about the injury. Just defer. And I'm guessing Rappaport just got in there. And he might not have, Reed probably didn't know that Rappaport had actually reported it while he was on the call. But I'm sure he was aware at the time. So again, the fact that we don't get this until yesterday, a little funny. But with a second opinion in there also from some other reports, the fact that Rick Burkholder, the team's trainer, you know, like a dude who actually knows the medical side of this, and to the Chiefs' credit, like Reed brings out his trainers to say the things that he doesn't want to in regards to, like, here's what's going on the injury front. It makes a lot of sense because Reed's not a doctor and he doesn't want to be a doctor as far as I can tell. So to bring out Burkholder there and then have him say that on Mahomes' MRI that it came out, quote, as good as we could possibly imagine. I mean, it feels like Christmas. We were getting those feelings from the reports back on Friday, but to hear it from Rick Burkholder, whenever the team is likely to try to, you know, under promise and over deliver in terms of these guys, I think maybe there's a lesson learned even more so from Eric Berry last year, being the day-to-day status that he was. We'll get to the words that Andy Reid used on a few of these other guys. But for the trainer to come out and say, this went as well as we could possibly imagine, is as good of a thing that I could have heard from Rick Burkholder as I could have possibly imagined. Like, general, like, kind of weak optimism, I guess, would have been good enough for me to be pretty excited about what he was saying there. As good as we could possibly imagine is a hell of a sentence to get from the trainer in this instance. So that's really, really good. Reed also mentioned that it would be, in his words, a stretch for Mahomes to play against the Packers, but they wouldn't rule him out. Listen, I tweeted that out. I knew that was going to happen. I knew what was going to happen after that was going to happen, where everyone goes, wait, holy bleep, he said what? Everyone in the room tweets it out. Everybody goes, wait a second. Is he saying there's a chance that he could play? Because saying it's a stretch, like, I can, you know, how much of a stretch? I can't do the splits, but I can go ahead and get a nice deep lunge. Well, what do you mean it's a stretch for him to play? I think he means, like, an Olympic gymnast stretch, or maybe actually, you know what, I'm going to change that. I think he means a Mr. Fantastic from the Fantastic Four stretch. Literally a superhero could make that stretch, but no one else on the planet really could. So I'm not in any way expecting Patrick Mahomes to play against the Packers. I might give him a 10% chance to play against the Vikings just because all of the optimism around the team. For me, man, I mean, I said this on the emergency AES podcast we did on Friday. I can't see someone being like antsy about getting Mahomes back before the bye week. Because in that bye week, and listen, maybe he comes back and plays in the game before it, in Mexico against the Chargers. And then you say, hey, you know what? We want him to play now because he's going to get a whole week to see how that knee reacts and everything like that. Maybe there's some argument to be had there. But for me, he could get essentially, you know, going back to Thursday, roughly 6 weeks of rest while missing, you know, four games, plus obviously missing the Broncos game post-injury. I would be still willing to sign on for that, even as I am cognizant of the fact that the Chiefs seem to have some real optimism about where he's going. I've mentioned this somewhere. I might have even tweeted it out. I can't remember, but we were joking around me and Nate Taylor of The Athletic and Ali Trost of 810. We're talking after the pressers on Monday, yesterday. And we were joking about how Mahomes should just be listed on the injury report with knee, ankle, and left side of the offensive line. Because all of those reasons are okay, when you add them all together, those are okay reasons to just let a dude sit. Like, his life gets easier whenever he is completely healthy, and whenever his offensive line is back to close to full health. If Fisher and Wiley aren't back yet, if I mean, Sammy Watkins isn't about keeping him upright, but it, you know, certainly doesn't hurt. But if Fisher and Wiley aren't back before the bye week, it only makes it easier for me to be cautious. Merely cautious will do here. And Lebo asked Andy Reid about sort of the balance of playing guys versus not playing guys and all of that. And I see where Reid was coming from throughout that answer about, you know, you got to just play. You got to just play the guys that can play. And you don't want to basically tell a locker room, hey, you know, we're sitting this guy out this week, whatever. If you look down the road years and years in the future, yeah, LeSean McCoy might not love carrying the ball 90 times while you wait for Patrick Mahomes to get back because you want to make sure he's healthy for 10 years down the line. But I think everybody gets it if you say, hey, we don't want to rush him back. We want to make sure he is here for the playoffs this season. I think that's eminently reasonable. The other thing, as far as managing expectations here, I don't want to be a pessimist. I want to just make sure we're careful maybe about the words that we choose here. Because here's the thing. If you talk about Patrick Mahomes being back ahead of schedule, that sounds great. If you talk about Mahomes being rushed back, that sounds horrifying. And so at this point, I think it's too soon to know what would be truer a certain amount of time down the road. It would be really, really hard for me to say playing against the Packers on Sunday night wouldn't be rushed back. To say that playing against the Vikings next week wouldn't be getting rushed back. Maybe even a third week. Those early indications, early reports were 3 week minimum. Just, I mean, listen, I don't want to watch the Chiefs with Matt Moore as their quarterback. I would really prefer it be Patrick Mahomes, but I can't even imagine. This is one of the things with the ankle injury, by the way. It wasn't like it was getting tweaked and everything, but it wasn't like there was a chance that high ankle sprain was going to turn into a high ankle break. With a knee and a kneecap and the tightness of all of the tendons in there and everything being in play, and a doctor can overrule me on this, you know, if Rick Burkholder says we looked at his knee and he's 100% good to go, then fair enough. I'm okay. But whenever you start talking about the possibility of, I mean, just any chance of even a freak incident like what happened on Thursday Night Football, moving his kneecap again with any sort of higher likelihood than he had before it was, you know, fully intact, I'd be absolutely horrified to put him back out there. Just horrified. I can't even imagine. Because here's the thing. Like Burkholder said, the results was as good as they could possibly imagine on the kneecap dislocation. If it happens again, the odds aren't nearly, the odds are not good that things will end nearly this well. With the ankle, it was a sprain, and, you know, eventually the thought was he would work it off, and he wasn't severely hampered by it in most instances. You saw him being a little less accurate, not being able to step through and all that, but he was moving pretty well before his knee got hurt too, by the way, like on Thursday. If there is any fear that kneecap isn't 100% back to where it was, 98% back, you know, I don't know what the reasonable best case scenario is. If it's short of that best case scenario, I don't want to see him play, because then what if that time tendons break, or that time the kneecap, you know, pops in a way that, again, that aggravates tendons. Or I think someone was tweeting some doctor was tweeting on Thursday night that if the kneecap breaks, it can also cut tendons in there and all of that. Like, I don't want to see the Chiefs playing with that fire until they go, nope, not really fire anymore. Just playing football again. because the risk feels so much higher when we're talking about a knee. So that's where I'm at in terms of what I feel comfortable rooting for, I guess. I'm rooting for the bye week and then back against the Raiders after that. And hopefully that does come with the return of Fisher and Wiley and Watkins and Chris Jones. And maybe at that point, Kendall Fuller. I don't know. To see the team back at full strength coming off of a bye, going into another month of regular season football, and then a month of playoffs, and then a Super Bowl in February, that would be just right for doing Goldilocks style here. Coming back at the end of the season, that's too late. Coming back for the Vikings, that's too soon. Coming back against the Chargers or in the bye week after the Chargers game, both of those would feel just right. Probably the bye week, though. Weird that I did a Goldilocks impression? Sure. The other injury news there from Burkholder is that Kendall Fuller just straight up broke his thumb. Like, that's what a fracture means. A fracture means a break. And now, I don't know how much of a break. That's a little bit ambiguous. But he went to LA to have surgery. He's back now. They didn't give any timetable for his return. They didn't say that there was no timetable. You hear that one sometimes. That's not what happened. There just was no timetable. And Andy Reid didn't deliver anything on that front either. And then he did a cruel thing, Andy Reid, to Eric Fisher. Eric Fisher? What happened there? He did an unfair thing. It was a weird way that I said that. He did an unfair thing to Eric Fisher, Sammy Watkins, and Chris Jones. Or as I might say, my little baby face, Eric Fisher, Sammy Watkins, and Chris Jones. Done a Goldilocks impression and a baby impression. It's late. You heard Andy Reid, maybe not. I'll tell you. He did say that all three of those guys are day to day. Dun dun. That doesn't mean day to day, really. We've figured that out. Sammy Watkins, I don't know. Like a dude who just has a constant hamstring problem. I don't know. It would really help Matt Moore out if Sammy Watkins could play. I don't know if he can. I don't think he's going to be on this team next year. He's going to be on this team throughout this entire season. He's going to make money and then play when he can. That feels relatively reasonable to me at this point. Eric Fisher and Chris Jones, it doesn't sound like there's a huge sense of optimism. Like Reed mentioned Andrew Wiley before those three guys and said Wiley's not quite back yet. You know, he's working towards it. It seemed like maybe a little bit of a longer game on Fisher, Watkins, and Jones. The defense just had their best game of the year without Chris Jones. Don't read into that too much, please. But like I'm saying that I think that maybe they're working towards here's how we keep our head above water without Chris Jones. It's still way better with him, and I would still give him all the money he wants this offseason to get after the quarterback. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to make this defense look much worse than it looked against the Broncos. You can say, oh, well, was it real or was it Flacco? I think it was their best performance, and also it was Joe Flacco. And Aaron Rodgers is next, so I think we're going to get a nice sort of juxtaposition there. With all of that being said, I'm not holding my breath on the return of Fuller, Mahomes, Fisher, Watkins, or Jones. Those are all important players with important injuries. And this is just where we're at right now. Just don't know. Don't know about any of them. I think they're going to lose to the Packers. I mean, that's, you know, it's early. But my hunch without those guys is that they're going to lose to the Packers. Yep, losing three home games in a row. Not what you want. This one's different than the Colts and the Texans games. And they lose to the Packers, and they probably lose to the Vikings. We'll see. Obviously, it's a whole other week for dudes to get healthy and everything. But at this point, the AFC West is a nightmare. The 2 seed is going to be really, really tough to keep a hold on. But I don't know. It's plausible. The Chiefs could end up with that first round bye. They could just get a home game by winning the division. That would also be nice. First round bye would be excellent. You see with all the injuries how useful that is. I just don't know. I don't know if that path is really there. It would mean the Ravens stumbling a few times while the Chiefs are in this Mahomes-less stretch. And that is also, by the way, the reason that you would want to see Mahomes either rushed back or being ahead of schedule, depending on your stomach for the first word that I used there. That would be the reason that you would want to see him back as soon as possible, just to try to hold on to that first round bye in the playoffs. It would be excellent for everyone, unless Mahomes, you know, has a worse injury after that, or in that attempt to come back. That's what scares me. I think rightfully so, honestly. There's your update on the things that have happened this week in the injury front and how they all make me feel. We'll talk to Seth Kizer about what he expects the Chiefs offense to look like with Matt Moore, what he's willing to root for with the return of Patrick Mahomes, and where the Chiefs go from here. Coming up next on Sports Radio 810.
Kansas City's hometown sports station, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's really late in real time, but it's a Tuesday, so we now talk to Seth Kizer of The Athletic. You can read all of his pieces up at theathletic.com. Also, the Times Ours podcast with his two incredibly smart and handsome co-hosts, Nate Taylor and me. But Seth is the one here right now because, again, it's Tuesday, and sometimes good things continue to happen on a schedule. Seth, I got to say, your film reviews this week, your main pieces up on The Athletic so far this week feel very like 2017. It's like, hey, here's how the Chiefs can work with an underskilled quarterback and also a rookie defensive tackles film review.
we're traveling back in time a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it's really fair to Alex Smith to say that he and Matt Moore are contemporaries. Because Alex Smith has had a lot more success. Yeah, that's kind of the conversation, is what the Chiefs need to do to compensate for the quarterback position, which, you know what, actually that is pretty fair, because that's kind of the conversations we had around Alex Smith, too.
Yeah, and at the very least, it's, hey, how does Andy Reid work with not Patrick Mahomes? Like, we didn't know at the time that Alex Smith was going to be not Patrick Mahomes, but now, within the fullness of history, it feels like that's all come together. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, to sum up kind of where it stands with Matt Moore is the stuff we did talk about on Times Ours, that whole idea of, you know, Andy Reid at halftime, you know, says to Matt Moore, hey, Matt, just be yourself, man. Mm-hmm. You've got this. And then tells the rest of the team, you guys need to step up. That is still the funniest thing to me.
Yes.
It's just like, Matt, I believe in you. Hey, Tyreek, seriously, you're going to need to play really well, because otherwise we're going to lose.
Yeah.
Like,
and how true is that? I mean, like, that is sort of the facts of it. Like, I think probably the worst version of Matt Moore would be Matt Moore trying to play Patrick Mahomes. Like, that you don't want that.
Right. You want him to be himself. You want him to be a veteran quarterback who's seen a lot of things, probably going to be mostly predetermined reads, pre-snapped. If he can keep a cool head in the pocket and generally throw accurate passes, he'll be fine. To be fair, there's only like 20 humans in the world that can do those two things consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But, you know, so far he passed the first test. I think maybe not with flying colors, because when you go back and rewatch the game, Moore had some pretty rough snaps there. But as time went by and he looked a little more comfortable, he did a few things that I like. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Where do you stand right now, kind of in the big picture of everything? Because you and I haven't talked on this show or on 810, I guess, since we had the full spectrum of this last 7 days of Mahomes gets hurt. Oh, God, it's really bad. Oh, you know what? This is actually okay. And, you know, whenever you look at, again, sort of the grand scheme of where the Chiefs stand right now, plus the conversation of, when do you even allow yourself to root for Patrick Mahomes to be coming back?
I mean, Andy Reid has been cruel about this.
Yes, he has.
Because I was perfectly happy in my mind, with, okay, four games without him, then a bye week, that's fine.
Yes.
Given the state of the AFC West, they could lose all four of those games, and I still think they could come back, they could win the West.
Yeah.
Now, I hope they don't.
Correct.
But you know, so that to me, I was like, okay, let's say you got four games without Mahomes. Let's shoot for 2-2 or maybe 3-1 without him.
Yep.
You know, understanding that you're probably going to be underdogs now against the Packers and the Vikings, or at least you should be. You know, and then just, you know, see what happens. See if you can steal a couple wins there. Well, then Andy Reid is, oh, man, this is best-case scenario. I don't know. You can't put a timetable on these things. And I understand a lot of it is coach speak.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm just like, well, what if he's healthy, you know, against the Vikings?
What if he's healthy on Friday? Right, yeah.
Yeah. What if on Friday they're like, oh, I don't know, he's looking pretty good. Now, I mean, look, he's not going to play against Green Bay. I've had more people ask me that.
Mm-hmm.
If he plays against Green Bay, I will be shocked.
Yeah.
Like, beyond shocked, almost upset.
Yeah.
Until I see him on the field looking completely healthy. Because if nothing else, okay, take the opportunity. Let him rest that ankle.
Yeah.
And be 100% for the first time this year. You know, but I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be in Kansas City for the Vikings game.
Oh.
You might... I wouldn't mind seeing Mahomes live. I feel bad. My brother-in-law, well, he's a big Vikings fan. He's one of the people coming with. And in addition to my wife, this is finally our chance, Josh. We're going to get her on the radio.
I'm ready.
So I told him there's nothing like seeing Mahomes live.
Yeah.
Like, it's a show.
Yeah.
Because the you see the more subtle no-look things, mm-hmm. the weird angles. They look 10 times more impressive in person than on TV. And so that's disappointing. But, I mean, big picture, I mean, he's going to be out at least 3 weeks. He's got to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only safe way to be. The only way I would be okay with him coming back before the bye is if for, like, 2 weeks straight – his MRIs have been, like, beautiful, and he is, like, you know, doing the river dance in front of Andy Reid, showing him how healthy the knee is.
Right.
And there's literally, like, they've got not just from their team doctors, but from, like, third or fourth or fifth opinion saying, there's no greater risk here. We see nothing, absolutely no sign of a greater risk. Once that's going on, yes, then you play him. But as long as there's even like a 1%, like, well, you know, it's still a little swollen, you don't.
Yeah. I'm totally good with that. Like, I just, and again, with the ankle and everything, like, I was not on the team of, oh, just bench him against the Broncos and give him, you know, basically 2 weeks to rest up completely from that ankle. Because he was moving well enough, and I think you want to win football games because you don't have that many of them you get to play. But if you think there's any plausibility to an idea of re-aggravation of some sort, especially with something like the knee that feels so fragile whenever you see three dudes a week go down with all sorts of stuff going on their knee, I'm good with that. So let's go ahead and assume Matt Moore for a little while. Again, this is the post you put up earlier this week on The Athletic, talking about life with Matt Moore. You've already invoked the name of Alex Smith. You mentioned him in this article, which I'm glad that you did, because I do think that's going to be a lot of people's immediate connection point for the quarterback who's not Patrick Mahomes around Andy Reid's offense. So where do you even begin if you are retooling this offense with Matt Moore in mind?
I think you begin with, okay, what does Matt Moore do well? And which, honestly, I don't know enough about him to really know for sure.
Yeah.
I know what it looked like he did well in that limited action on Thursday. And what it looked like he did well was identifying a few things pre-snap. And when his first read was open, you know, when he knew where the ball was going because of the pre-snap read, he got the ball out quickly. And that worked very well. Now, I know it sounds ridiculous to say, well, everyone plays well when their first read is open. But I also think there's more to it than that, in that when you see guys that are consistently having open first reads, that usually means they're reading the defense correctly pre-snap. It's one of the things Alex Smith was very good at.
Mm-hmm.
He also, one thing that I saw some potential for was he moved around the pocket a little bit in the face of pass rush. Not like Mahomes. Everyone has to. It's going to look ugly to Chiefs fans. It's going to. Because this isn't fair. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
this isn't fair for Matt Moore. This is like, you know, whatever. You know, this is the reason why opening acts are opening acts, and then the Beatles are the Beatles, right?
Right.
Like, you didn't have the Beatles perform and then be like, hey, now, you know, John and the Crank Tunes. I don't know the names of bands.
I sat here so excited. First of all, your act was the Beatles, which, like, most of them are dead. Like, half of them are dead at this point. So you went with an old act. I was so excited for who your opening act was going to be.
I went safe there.
John and the Crank
Tunes. It was the easiest way to keep you from mocking me on bands that I actually might like, because I don't think that's safe information for you to have, frankly.
That's a great call.
And
don't open with Chris Tomlin. He's the closer.
Well, Third Day is the closer.
Oh my!
I mean,
Third Day in so long. Do they still exist?
They do. They put out great songs. You know what, Josh? I'm not doing this with you right now.
I just didn't know they were still making music.
But yeah, they put out great music.
I think I saw Third Day live at some point. Dead serious.
I think I might have too, but I'm not sure. It's not hard to see those bands live. It's like, even like when the Newsboys were at their peak, it's like, hey, they're in town, let's go. It'll cost $5. You know, that was never a difficult ticket to get.
And also, it's not hard to forget which one that you saw, because, you know, they all sound relatively similar.
Oh, yeah, that's fairly accurate. So with Matt Moore, people need to just adjust their expectations that they've had for quarterbacks. There is some line between horrendous and Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And I hope people remember that for Matt Moore's sake, because it's a little bit different. Like, if you had Nick Foles coming in for Alex Smith, right? He could perform okay, and people would be like, oh, yeah, that's good enough. Or even some people, oh, you should take Alex Smith's job. Whereas for Moore, I mean, he's coming in after the best show on earth. And so, but one thing he did do, especially on that long touchdown to Tyreek Hill, he moved around the pocket a little bit when he had some pressure, kept his eyes downfield, and delivered the throw. Now, when he didn't have open reads, he just folded up and took the sack, which I got to tell you, I'm okay with.
Yeah.
I'm okay with a quarterback who, and again, this is going to sound a lot like Alex Smith, although I would be stunned if Moore had that ceiling, but I'm okay with a quarterback who can move around the pocket a little bit, can usually call out the blitzes correctly, will throw an accurate pass when he's got the space, and won't make bad throws. If it's not there, he's just gonna hold on to it or try to scamper for a first down. I'm okay with that. And I think you could do a lot worse for a backup than what they've currently got with Matt Moore. So for me, it's just a matter of, okay, he's comfortable with pre-snap reads. He's comfortable with maybe a little more of this short and intermediate work, maybe rather than being Mr. Deep Ball. Mm-hmm. Although Matt Moore could sling it back in the day. He had a decent arm. I'm assuming he still does. So you take those things, you simplify the reads, you try to make it as easy on him as possible. Hey, Tyreek Hill, you're going to run a lot of curls. You're going to run a lot of quick outs. Travis Kelce is probably going to be Matt Moore's best friend.
Yes.
Because he's always open. So those are the things that I would do, is just try to simplify it, make it a little bit shorter, a little bit quicker, move away from the vertical attack that they've been focusing on all year. And the side benefit to that is teams won't be as prepared for it, because that's not what's on film.
And for me, maybe the most important thing that I could use to qualify everything you just said, the reason that everything you just said isn't going in one ear and out the other for me, is that we're not talking about this for the rest of the season. Like,
correct.
I don't think I can understate here is how important it is that we're talking about this, like, poor man's Alex Smith strategy, quick stuff, Travis Kelce's his best friend. We're talking about that kind of stuff for 3 or 4 games, not the remainder of the year. Because if we're doing this for the remainder of the year, man, I would be hard pressed for you to get me excited about talking about anything Chiefs related, which sucks. But is, like, that's the honest truth at this point. And so I'm just, and that's, maybe that's another reason that I'm going to be as wary as anybody in terms of coming back too soon for Mahomes. Because, God, I need him to be the pot of gold at the end of a monochrome rainbow. By the way, I saw whenever I saw Third Day, Monochrome Rainbow was actually opening for Third Day. That was the show.
And you're absolutely right about both, actually.
Yes.
but the thing with Mahomes, it is for 3 or 4 games. I wouldn't be surprised if he came back sooner than expected. The main reason being, you see that a lot with these younger guys and some of these, like, athletic freaks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you remember Adrian
Peterson.
Well,
you're talking to one right now. I mean, listen, I can give you some firsthand experience. I'm being
right, I know. I should have actually been interviewing you on that subject, and I apologize. I have no experience being an athletic freak.
And it's been so long
since
you've been a younger guy.
Sure. And so the big thing is, you never know. You know, Adrian Peterson came back from a torn ACL in like 6 months.
Yeah.
And he was ridiculously healthy and awesome. That's not all the time, though. And sometimes things linger because you got guys like Sammy Watkins. Injuries just seem to linger for him. Mahomes strikes me as a guy that I'd be willing to bet you almost anything that he'll probably be pretty cool about the Green Bay game. But if he's feeling good, you can almost guarantee that he's going to be hassling Andy Reid.
Yeah.
After that. Like, just like, no, I'm fine. No, I'll be really careful. No, I'll be so careful, you know. I'll only play on one leg, coach, you know, whatever.
Right, right.
You can see him going that route. But it does have to be that long-term mentality. Because, like you said, it definitely lowers the ceiling for this Chiefs team. With Matt Moore, could they win a Super Bowl? Probably not, no. And it would take an incredible confluence of events for it to happen. So Mahomes needs to be healthy, and so they need to wait as long as possible. And in the meantime, just steal half the games.
Yeah. Yeah, half of them. Listen, Andy Reid talked about this a little bit on Monday, where he was asked, mm-hmm. like, hey, how do you balance the long-term thing versus the short-term thing? And, you know, he said, basically, you can't tell the guys in the locker room that you're holding out essentially Mahomes because you're right. worried about 5 years down the road, so you're not going to put out your best stuff there for these next couple of games. But I would argue, and I'm guessing Andy Reid understands this, I'd argue that you absolutely can tell that offensive line and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and whatever, hey, listen, right now Mahomes is at 80%, and we want him to be 100% going into the playoffs because we want to win a Super Bowl this season. I do think there's room for that amongst even hyper-competitive dudes in that locker room.
Absolutely, because they want to win, ultimately. And even guys that are more maybe, you know, rentals or guys that are on contract years, you know, they're going to understand that, you know, the best chance at a good contract is a deep playoff run, and you show out in the playoffs. It gives more film for other teams to see. So it does benefit everyone the deeper you go in the playoffs, especially if you're part of a Super Bowl-winning team. You can bet your bottom dollar that's worth money the next year.
And it's worth the Super Bowl. That's also worth the ring.
Yeah, these are competitive guys. And so I agree that you've got to be careful about how you approach it.
Sure.
And a lot of it's going to depend. I really believe this. A lot of it's just going to depend on whatever MRIs are showing.
Sure.
Because it could be that, you know, in next week at this time, you know, Mahomes just isn't. They thought that he would come along faster. And if he does, well, you just crank things back and think about December and January. Because this team is almost certain to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Even if it were Matt Moore the rest of the season, I would still be pretty confident that they're going to make the playoffs because the reality is this is a pretty stacked roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we as Chiefs fans, you know, they've had a couple rough games in a row. So people go, oh, this roster's so flawed. And I even wrote about questioning some of Veach's decisions at the top end.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of talent in the room. That's just how it is. And they lost a couple of games against two very good teams with, like, half their roster out. And so that's going to happen. And so when you, as everyone else gets healthier, even if it was Matt Moore, I think they'd make the playoffs. But if the goal is the Super Bowl, you need Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of excited because I know it's only a short-term thing. I'm kind of excited to see how Reid adjusts and whether or not they're able to catch Green Bay off guard. I think they might. I'm very afraid of Aaron Rodgers, but I think they might catch Green Bay off guard with some of the stuff they're going to do, because right now what Green Bay has is they have one half of football that was completely unplanned for Matt Moore to look at, in which the Chiefs really cranked back like the whole fourth quarter because the game was already won. So they have no idea what they might do. They have no idea what the offense is going to look like. And that, I think, buys you an edge over the course of the next couple games. And so I'm excited. This is a chance for Reed to do some of his best work.
I will point out that thankfully Matt Moore won't be playing Aaron Rodgers directly. The defense will be, and so I do want to talk to you about that. But also, earlier I discovered a playlist on Spotify called Youth Group Throwback. Like, it is a Spotify curated playlist, Youth Group Throwback, featuring hits from DC Talk, Audio Adrenaline, Jars of Clay, Delirious,
nice.
Plum, Sonic Flood. Remember Sonic Flood? What a good
band
name.
I do remember Sonic Flood.
God, that's a good band name, Sonic Flood. So right now that playlist has 4,086 followers. So now I'll make it 4,087. You can make it 488, and we'll see if that grows over the course of the week as people catch this podcast and everything. I'm going to be keeping an eye on that particular number.
Sure. I'm happy to do that. But my first question, I do have one question for you.
Yes.
What is Spotify?
It's like someone took all of your records and then put them in your computer.
My records.
What, your cassettes? You want cassettes? I don't.
You took my. Hey. That's gone into the not funny realm because okay. I did listen to cassettes quite a bit.
So it's like the big CD, like the thing with all the sleeves in your car that you have with a zipper where you can open it up and then just all those CDs
yes.
in there. It's like if you could fit all of that into your phone, basically.
Ooh, wow. That's that's a very cool idea.
Yeah.
What they won't think of next.
Ask one of your kids about it. You wrote a piece on Colin Saunders up on The Athletic right now. And I want to talk about the defense as a whole a little bit. An interesting national storyline that we've talked about briefly that I think touches on what the Chiefs have done. But whenever you take this look at Colin Saunders, where I believe if memory serves, you said was flat out bad in his debut. He's been getting a lot of praise for his game on Thursday night. Not to say that you were wrong in either of those evaluations. I tend to agree. But what did you see as you were evaluating him a little bit more in full?
Sure. As I went and charted his snaps against Denver, he did a pretty good job. He didn't have a lot of opportunities to rush the passer and didn't look super comfortable doing it when he did. So that's kind of, for right now, that's going to be a work in progress because they didn't plan for this.
Right.
The plan was not for him to be playing.
Right.
You know, this was a combination of Chris Jones and Xavier Williams both getting hurt.
Yep.
And so, you know, next man up. So he really, in my opinion, the first couple games he was in, he was part of the problem with the run defense. He struggled to hold at the point of attack. Against the Broncos, he did a better job in that area. He didn't have nearly as many of losses, and he actually had some pretty nice wins. Now, you never know because one game doesn't necessarily translate to another.
Mm-hmm.
So people will say, well, the Broncos offensive line is bad, and maybe that's what's going on. Or it could be just that, you know, Indy's offensive line is that good, and he just wasn't ready the first
yeah.
couple games. Because some of the things that he's doing, you can see that the natural strength is there, that he's got good natural athleticism. He's just learning how to anchor against guys that are almost as big as he is. We, you know, in college, he always had a relatively huge size advantage, and certainly an athleticism advantage. And so what I saw from him in run defense was he was doing a better job kind of exploding underneath the pads of defenders rather than playing a little tall. He wasn't playing as finesse as I think he likes to, because if you try to play finesse against the run in the pros, you're going to get just bowled over because they're too smart.
Right.
They understand how to use your own movement against you. The moment you start moving away, they're going to just transition that into a pancake. And so he looks like he's working on his hand placement. He was able to make a couple of stops with his athleticism. And one of my favorite sequences for him was actually the very first drive for Denver. They had a run in for the touchdown from like first and goal. Well, they ran right at Colin Saunders.
Mm-hmm.
And on the touchdown, he got knocked backward and was part of the reason why a touchdown was given up. Well, you know the drill. The Chiefs got a penalty because that's what the Chiefs do. Mm-hmm. And so the Broncos then had the ball at the 1 yard line. They tried to run it in for a 2-point conversion. They again ran it right at Colin Saunders. This time, though, he had a 1-on-1. He stood up the guard. did a great job giving no ground, kept his head up, and started and got his right arm in the way to help Reggie Ragland, who flew in there like a frigging bullet.
Yeah.
And they got the stuff at the line of scrimmage. So it's cool to see, like, you know, one snap to another, back to back, what looks like growth. Like, okay, I got embarrassed on that last snap. I got to do something different here. And so, you know, with Saunders, I assume it's going to be kind of a term that that one of the attorneys that I at a firm I used to work with, they always said, we're going to do this steady by jerks. And I think that's how it's going to be with Colin Saunders. I think you're going to see kind of a couple steps forward, a couple steps back, kind of steady by jerks growth from him.
What about the rest of the defense? I know that first of all, that you're still going through, you can blame Game Pass for the fact that you're still going through for Thursday night game. You're still going through the all 22 on Fenton and Ragland, who I would argue, I think, are probably the two most interesting guys out of that game. And sure. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Anthony Hitchens, just to see what his role was as that linebacker group changed and playing a lot more of Ragland in that, and almost no Darren Lee. I think he had two snaps. But whenever you look at the full defense and you try to balance the Flacco versus actual improvement argument, where are you at this point?
You know, some of it was certainly Flacco being a statue. I mean, that certainly helped the Chiefs at times. But their coverage on the back end was pretty good. Mm-hmm. By and large, they did a pretty nice job. I mean, like you said, Fenton, so far from what I'm seeing on film, he looks solid. Yeah. Now, we'll see how it goes moving along. But that was a nice game he put together. He looked like he understands zone concepts. He tackled well. He moved around well. He matched up physically in man. He did a good job. You know, for him, the physical characteristics were always the concern, whether he had the quickness and the top-end speed to really stick. But some guys, you know, they just play differently than they test. Mm. And so it'll be interesting. He's a guy to keep an eye on because that changes a lot of things for the Chiefs. If he puts together another strong performance against Green Bay, maybe they say, maybe we don't need a corner, which I don't know if I'd go that route if I were them, but whatever. And then Ragland and Hitchens, you're talking about the linebackers. It was kind of a different type of game plan. They clearly, from the outset, said, hey, we can't have guys run for, you know, 7 yards a carry on us anymore,
right,
which is true, mm-hmm, because if the run defense is bad enough, it does become important. Mm-hmm. But it has to just be really, 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 really bad. Of course, and this is just worth noting, and I hate myself for doing this right now, it's worth noting that even though the run defense was really good on the first drive, the Broncos still scored a touchdown.
They did.
Because if the pass defense doesn't hold up, it doesn't matter. And so both facets of the defense held up. And what I liked about what they did is they stopped trying to, and maybe we'll see if this continues. It's going to be tougher to get away with against, like, Rodgers and better quarterbacks. But they stopped trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And they stopped saying, hey, we're going to have Reggie Ragland and Anthony Hitchens drop into coverage.
Yeah.
Because neither of those guys, Hitchens is better than Ragland, but neither of them are super comfortable in that role. Mm-hmm. And so what would end up happening is, yeah, they'd be back there in zone, but eventually, I mean, how many times have we seen a throw go over their head or go just a couple yards to the left or right of them?
12,000.
Oh, yeah.
I actually charted that one. I know you're busy, so I charted that. The answer is 12,000.
And so what I liked seeing was they said, okay, well, what are they good at in pass defense? Well, both Ragland and Hitchens are good blitzers. They are guys that can – once they get going downhill, they get downhill in a hurry, and both of them are also – especially Ragland, maulers, who, when they've got momentum, they're on one of Ragland's sacks. I mean, he just slammed into the center. I think it was the center. It was one of the interior linemen. And ended up just basically knocking him over. And he was supposed to be kind of the setup guy, right? Someone was supposed to stunt around him, mm-hmm, after he'd knocked into the line. Well, he knocked the guy over, and the rest of the line went to block their other guys because they recognized what the play call was. Then Ragland turned around and said, oh, hey, it's Joe Flacco, and tackled him.
Right.
And so they're great downhill, and they're able to get there in a hurry. And it doesn't, you know, they finish strong. They're able to, they can take on linemen directly. It's a much better use of their talents to send them downhill than to have them in coverage. Mm. Now, is that sustainable for week after week after week after week? I have no idea. But I do know that Bill Belichick's defense,
yes,
is sending linebackers constantly and stacking the line of scrimmage constantly, and they're doing real well with it week after week after week after week.
So that was, yeah, that was the one other thing I wanted to talk about here, because I don't have a lot of time left, but it's a really interesting concept, because we've seen Spags actually do a decent amount of those kind of cover zero blitzes where you just say, all right, get there, and then everyone else, hold up. And there was a really interesting thread. I was unfortunate enough to watch the first three quarters of Monday Night Football last night, and then I turned it off because I have some amount of self-respect, but it doesn't kick in until it's absolutely desperation time. But I did stick around through three quarters of that to find out that that was happening a ton from Belichick to Darnold and working with great effect. They mentioned it on the broadcast at some point, and I literally wrote up a tweet and then just deleted it before I sent it because I didn't feel – I was doing a fantasy basketball draft. I wasn't ready for this conversation. But they mentioned briefly, like, hey, this is something you can do, you know, whenever your coverage holds up. And then I wanted to go back to the conversation you and I had three, four, 5 months ago about, hey, invest in your corners. You can be a little more aggressive in your pass rush. That's what the Patriots have been doing with great success. That correlates more with defensive success and winning and all of that. But I was all too much for a tweet. And it was also too much for a setup to a question. But what do you make of the cover zero thing that Belichick's been doing a ton of? And if that's maybe some footsteps that the Chiefs could be following in at this point.
You know, Belichick, I think they're not going to be able to do it with the same success he does because he's Belichick for starters. Mm-hmm. And they have a few pieces on the chessboard like Hightower and a few other linebackers that can kind of do a variety of things mm-hmm. that I'm not sure the Chiefs have. That said, when you really look at that defense, top to bottom, personnel-wise, you're not really wowed by it. But they've been dominating teams. Now, I do think part of that is schedule-related.
Sure.
But they've been just crushing teams. And what I think is great about what they're doing is something that I've seen Spagnuolo imitate is – You know, everyone says, oh, no, just throw slants all day over the top of the cover zero blitzes. Well, I don't think those people remember the first interception Mahomes threw against the Patriots last year, where that's what he thought. Oh, yeah, it's just quick over the middle of the field, be easy. But the thing you have to do is you show seven guys coming after the quarterback, and then some of them rush. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't. Some of them drop. Some of them just move a little inside. And the point is to leave offensive linemen blocking air mm-hmm. while you get free rushers. And then if you're able to do that while still dropping a couple of those guys, those shallow zones get flooded with bodies, and it's just not as open as you'd think. So it's not about just firing, you know, slant after slant over the middle of the field, because what they'll do is they'll just eventually drop a linebacker right there, and he'll pick it off. I really like it. I think that would be something that fits the group that they have very well, because when you look at kind of the NASCAR package that they have with, you know, Okafor and Clark and Ogba, you know, those guys especially, but then Passanio, those are all guys who, even though they're not super comfortable doing it, they can drop into coverage and have long arms. You know what I mean? Just be in passing lanes and at least prevent those quick, easy passes to beat the blitz. And then in the meantime, guys like Hitchens and Ragland, those guys are better off blitzing than they are in coverage. And so I would love to see them continue to use Ragland and Hitchens like they did against the Broncos, because they just don't have the horses in coverage right now to say, nope, we're just going to lock you down. And the front four, they did start getting some pressure, just the front four, but they haven't consistently so far this year. I expect that to improve, but without Chris Jones, it's going to be tough. And so I think it makes sense to be as aggressive as possible and just force teams to make plays to beat you. So I'd love for them to keep imitating that and keep stacking the line of scrimmage, because some of the most success they've had this year has been on those snaps.
I would absolutely love more of that. Use it without Chris Jones. I don't know if you heard. He's day-to-day. He could be back any month now.
Yeah, the Jones thing is interesting.
Day-to-day, baby. Come on. What sort of correlation would you have with that phrase that wouldn't fill you with complete and utter confidence?
Well, and I also, I just haven't seen much of him. I mean, he's not, it doesn't seem like he's out and about.
No.
And so I'm curious what's going on there. Because outside the occasional thankful tweet that he sends out, there's just not a lot of information there. So for him, given how little we've heard, I'm guessing he's going to be out for at least another few weeks.
I think that's fair. I think that's relatively fair on Fisher. Burkholder gave Fisher, Chris Jones, and Watkins, I think, all day to day. But also, like, the Chiefs are not going to tell you bleep about injuries that they don't have to tell you. Like, they told us what we knew about Mahomes already for the most part. Burkholder did give that, like, as good as we could have imagined sort of thing. But also, like, he was like, yeah, Kendall Fuller broke his thumb and went to L.A. and had surgery. Now he's back. That's all. I was like, wait a second. Can we get more info on that? No, that's it. That you get that much. So mm-hmm. I imagine we'll be largely shrouded in darkness for all those guys. And just until we're not anymore, which is, you know, that's the status quo, I guess.
Yeah, that just is what it is. Andy plays things pretty close to the chest in terms of injuries.
The last thing on that front, we mentioned Mahomes' knee and ankle. Allie Trost made the point following the pressers. She and Nate and I were all talking. She also said, you know, the other thing you could do here is just wait until Eric Fisher gets healthier also. Like, it could all really come together. So what I think should be on the injury report for this week whenever Patrick Mahomes is listed as out is Patrick Mahomes out, knee, ankle, left side of the offensive line, in parentheses. That, I think, should be his designation.
It really would be fun if, like, in a few weeks, or even if it's, you know, 3 weeks or 4 weeks, the Chiefs were actually at full strength, because that has not happened at all this year, other than, like, the first quarter of the Jags game,
yep.
And they looked like they were about to bludgeon them.
Yeah.
And it sure would have been would be nice to see this offense with Hill healthy, with Watkins healthy, with Mahomes not on a gimpy foot.
If that happens at the beginning of December, they could literally lose. Like, they could literally lose their next four games. But if on December 1st everyone is back, I will be absolutely ecstatic, and everything will be good enough for me.
I'm right there with you,
Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. You can read your piece is coming out soon, right? On the rest of that for the defense, and just sort of waiting on Game Pass to get its bleep together.
Yes, and they finally do now. Now the All-22 is available. So I'm going to look at Rashad Fenton. That's everyone's biggest request. I'm going to actually look a little bit at Armani Watts, his special teams work, because he caught my eye a few times. I'm going to take a look at the usage of Ragland and Hitchens. I might just kind of go through the sacks and then look at what they did differently on the run defense, while reminding people that run defense isn't nearly as important as pass defense. But, you know, so basically the usual.
It's perfect. It's great. So that'll be up on The Athletic soon. Follow him on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan. You can basically write along with the film reviews, because all of the tweets that Seth puts out, that'll give you a little taste of what's coming up next. And then, Seth, we'll talk on Tuesday after the Chiefs have a miraculous victory over the Green Bay Packers, either with the miraculous healing of Patrick Mahomes' knee or Patrick Mahomes giving all of his powers to Matt Moore for the week. And he'll just do his best Pat Mahomes impression.
I'm excited for either of those things.
Thank you, Seth. Again, Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan. Read everything that he writes at TheAthletic.com, where you can also find Times Ours, the podcast with him and myself and Nate Taylor. Monday's episodes are always free wherever you get your podcasts. Friday's just subscribers for The Athletic. We'll talk a little more Chiefs whenever we come back here on Sports Radio 810.
The most powerful sports station in America has a home in Kansas City. This is Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into Sports Radio 810. Just a little bit of time left with you tonight. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but I guess that it's fine. Boom! There we go. Got three of them, so it sounded like it was on purpose. I'm Josh Briscoe with you here just for a little bit longer this evening, talking about some Chiefs stuff to wash down all that baseball. The thing we touched on towards the end there with Seth that's really interesting to me is looking at all the stuff about the cover zero blitzes and what the Patriots were doing last night against poor Sam Darnold. My God. What we were seeing there from the Patriots, and when we've seen that from the Chiefs, I feel like there's always an immediate question, not just from others, but from myself, that I ask, why don't we see way, way, way more of that? And I still kind of think it's a good question. Whenever you look at the concept of leaving no safety help back behind essentially an all-out blitz, if you're, you know, playing Madden, you're just bringing it all the heat all at once. How do you counter that? And you know, Seth mentioned the slants thing, but that's where Mahomes threw that first pick against the Patriots last year, because you show blitz and you drop somebody back. If you show that kind of blitzing all the time, or at least very, very frequently, not literally all the time, but if you show that on maybe even a large fraction of passing downs, what are you opening yourself up to, and what do you need to have to pull that off? The Chiefs, I think, with Spagnuolo, could do more of this than they're currently doing. The question, I think, needs to be, hey, can your corner lock this down for just long enough for that pass rush to get there whenever you're essentially overloading that offensive line? You're sending too many pass rushers in one spot of the line, and maybe like Seth used the phrase, you got a lineman blocking air elsewhere. Mitch Schwartz was tweeting about it last night. Jeff Schwartz was too, but Mitch Schwartz is currently on the Chiefs, so I found it even more interesting. But he was kind of taking issue with some of the broadcasting early on Monday Night Football. Saying, oh, well, you know, they're here, the offensive line's getting beat. And he's saying the offensive line wasn't really getting beat. The Patriots were just sending lots of pressure. The line couldn't really, like, they were literally outnumbered. And so I have a thread here that I think is really, really interesting that we can talk about in terms of countering it. But I do think if the Chiefs brought more, there would be, again, the test of the guys in coverage. Like, hey, Ward, Breland, Claiborne, Fuller, Fenton, whatever, any of those guys who end up being out there. Is that right? Did I say all the right names? I feel like I said too many names. Felton is filling in for Fuller. Both of them count. Ward, Claiborne, Breland. Yeah, I guess there are five guys kind of in the rotation now whenever you count Fenton, and I guess really now don't count Fuller. Will Claiborne coming back was nice because it actually gave him a little bit of flexibility, so much so that whenever I said all of those names of dudes that I feel decent about, I literally thought I said something wrong. That's how much things have changed very quickly. And I'm sure that will go away. That good feeling will go away whenever Aaron Rodgers starts picking it apart. But you have to rely on those guys and say, hey, you cannot get beat off the line here. You cannot fall over. Because if that happens, this whole thing falls apart. But if you can hold on to this matchup for 2 seconds, Tyrann Mathieu or Dan Sorensen is going to murder the quarterback. So hold on. Not literally, Bashad. Not literally. But Dominic Foxworth, who's genuinely become one of my favorite people at ESPN, if you're not following his work, whenever he's on Le Batard, it's always great. His Twitter account, which I wasn't even following until last night, is at Foxworth24. He put together a thread about the Patriots with their zero blitzing. And I just thought this whole thread was really, really interesting. Pat's going to keep, and this, by the way, I will say before I actually do read this thread, this is useful for the Chiefs stopping it and for the Chiefs enacting it, which I just think is fascinating. Anyway, I also think this is understandable in a way that I didn't feel like I needed a big cork board with red yarn to understand it. So I hope that extends over the radio. So Foxworth tweeted this whole thread. Pat's going to keep zero blitzing till the Jets make them pay. Bill Belichick taught me how to beat zero blitz in the 2005 playoffs. Anybody want to know how? If the defense blitzes the free safety, they will have the offense outnumbered. So there will be a free runner at the quarterback. The quarterback only has as much time as it takes for the unblocked man to get to him, less than 2 seconds, which eliminates all but quick routes or goes. Max protect doesn't work because the offense is still outnumbered. In 05, Bill tried to beat it by motioning... Listen to this. Bill tried to beat it by motioning the slot receiver across the formation and having him block the end man on the line. That way, the receiver takes two defenders out of the play, the man covering him and the man he blocks. Now, we actually saw a little bit of this. We've seen Chiefs running backs laying down a block. I don't know if it's the same logic or not, but I read this tweet. I think we saw McCoy do that once and one of the Williamses do that once. Interesting. Foxworth has a couple more tweets here. So that slot, the receiver can take two defenders out of the play, the man covering him, the man he blocks, which can give the quarterback as much time as he would have against cover one. That allows for intermediate routes, double moves, deep crossers, etc. All that without a free safety to clean things up. No DB can cover all of that consistently. I add parenthetically here, Foxworth was a defensive back. And that's tonight's edition of Bill is Smarter Than Us. Somehow, we, being the Broncos, when Dominique was playing, won that game. The following week, the Steelers used a modified version of that same game plan with Hines Ward, who was built for that job, and they blew us out and wore my rookie ass out. I mean, that's fascinating. It's fascinating that maybe Belichick there has a solution on some level to these cover zero blitzes, whatever, you know, no help as you're bringing the whole house or whatever. Maybe he has that answer, but also, can teams pull that off, and is that worth the risk? Football, you're always risking stuff with those decisions that you're making, right? I'm not saying by any means at all that Steve Spagnuolo hasn't thought about doing more really aggressive blitzes in cover zero or cover one. I wish they would do more of that, but I'm sure Spagnuolo has spent a ton of time trying to figure out what they do best. Again, to Seth's point from earlier, at the very least, that seems to be sending Hitchens and Ragland more often. Maybe you're not abandoning the safeties, which, again, the Patriots were doing constantly on Monday Night Football last night. I just found that whole thread really fascinating. Maybe I don't even have an actual, like, enormous takeaway there, where takeaway one for me is I wish the Chiefs would do more of this, but takeaway two is if they're not going to do more of it, they should at least know how to beat it like that. And I'm also would imagine that Andy Reid probably does. I just don't feel like that kind of stuff makes it through to us very often. And us for me is media, us for you might just be fans, whatever. There's so much stuff like that that I don't really feel like I can possibly figure out by watching games in real time. And maybe, you know, I mean, Seth has certainly found stuff going through tape all the time and saying, hey, here's what the Chiefs did, or maybe here's what the Chiefs could do. But so much of it to me seems to be, oh, well, here's what they did. Here's why that did or didn't work. Actually coming up with the answers like Foxworth was talking about Belichick doing, I just think is worth your time. So in a concept that's really interesting, you just saw the Patriots do a lot last night that we could see the Chiefs doing more of, seems like a worthwhile investment to me. All right, that's going to do it for us here tonight on Sports Radio 810. We are shutting the station down. Not literally. If you're listening live, there's national programming after us for the overnight until the Border Patrol picks it back up in the morning. But I am done. Beards McFly is done. We will have another one of these Chiefs shows following the programming on Friday night following high school football. I will also be on a remote on Saturday morning, if anyone wants to come hang out, not even early morning, at noon on Saturday, I'll be at Bill George's Olathe Subaru this Saturday for their Subaru Loves Pets event, where there are going to be pets out there that you can adopt from Wayside Waifs. There's going to be a pet costume contest. I just think, and you can also, you know, test drive Subarus, or just what you could literally show up to this event on Saturday and leave with a new dog and a new car. That feels like a pretty good event. So I'll be doing a Sports Saturday from noon to 2 out there. I'll also talk to you again on Friday night. I'll be around here and there up until then. But as far as our Chiefs evening shows, that'll be back on Friday. I'll talk more to you Saturday. Then we'll have pre- and post-game on Sunday surrounding Matt Moore versus Aaron Rodgers, barring something absolutely stunning. So I'll talk to you whenever I talk to you. Thanks for subscribing to the Almost Entirely Sports podcast feed. I'll talk to you next time. Bye, Mom.
Follow the Chiefs right here on your home for the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl. Sports Radio 810 WHB.